a deep dive into the East End of Long Island, New York, with people who are committed to making our beautiful community and the world a more enlightened place. We prize good vibes and offer hope for a brighter, more sustainable future. Join us as we explore at Hamptons Consciousness, the real Hamptons.
Hi guys, welcome to Hamptons Consciousness. We are here with Dave Falkowski of Omo Apothecary. Tell us a little bit more about what you do here, Dave.
Sure. So I started my journey about 20 years ago in food and medicine. In my backyard here, growing organic mushrooms. I'm a bit of a, I guess you say, an acolyte of Paul Stamets. I was literally the gentleman that wrote the book and took mushroom cultivation out of the dark in the closet. And so I started growing the mushrooms in my backyard. Through the years, I moved to some family land in Bridgehampton where I started to grow some vegetables. We started a food processing kitchen, and in the last several years, we've been earned our license in the state on the legal side to cultivate and most importantly, manufacture hemp and CBD products. And that leads us to where we are today at Omo the Apothecary, which is technically a female-owned store by my wife, Ashley. So that's where we started and where we're going.
So tell us more. Hemp is a big key buzzword these days. Tell us about the difference between hemp and marijuana and, you know, why hemp?
Sure. Yeah, you know, most importantly, this is cannabis. This is plant medicine, right? When we talk about, say, hemp, marijuana, or, say, medical marijuana, these are different compliance swim lanes or licensing structures. So those of us who are here in New York are listening to this internationally broadcast and syndicated show. We could go to a convenience store or gas station and buy a can of beer. And there's a licensing structure, a craft brewery license structure in New York State. But if we want to go and buy some liquor, we have to go over to a liquor store where distilleries, there's a different program that licenses those. There's a different tax structure. So these are different swim lanes. So when we look at the difference between hemp, marijuana, there's a legal definition that hemp is cannabis, so is marijuana, but hemp has 0.3% or less of THC at the time of a compliance test in the field. There's this arbitrary number, but that's really what it comes down to is when they test it and they say, okay, it's at or below this number, you have a compliant hemp crop. Whereas a marijuana farmer in a different swim lane where there's no THC cap, they're not held to this 0.3% number, may grow a CBD dominant varietal that is 10% THC and 10% CBD, but that would be legal. So the hemp lane, really, it's limited by how much THC is in the product.
And THC is what gets you high.
Yeah, THC is, you know, what we know as the intoxicating compound. But I'm sure as many of us know, once we start to identify, standardize, and replicate experiences, that there's many dosing sizes and serving applications, such as topical, that may not necessarily be intoxicating. As a matter of fact, they can be perceived as therapeutic and or medicinal.
How did you gravitate to hemp after your foray into just, you know, straightforward?
Yeah, so, you know, to where it started with mushrooms and then the vegetables and food processing. The truth of the story is in late 2017, there was a Russian gentleman. As I understand it, he had made his money in fashion and he had some interest in the cannabis industry out west. Via a friend, he wanted to have a conversation about cannabis in New York. And really at the time, there were real no clear legislative motions that were about to pass or anything, at least that I saw or was aware of. You know, just like we had the passage of the MRTA earlier this year. And he's sucking on this vape pen and he's talking about cannabis and CBD. And it was really kind of like one of the first times I firsthand was hearing about this. And he was talking about how it was the real medicine and they're looking to convert some of their facilities out in California in the desert into these CBD production, cultivation, and manufacturing facilities. And that in New York, he heard that a hemp program was lifting its cap on the amount of research partners it was having growing hemp and also processing it. This is the first I ever heard. That was the only time we ever spoke. He never actually followed up. So it was kind of like, in a way, like this ghostly apparition that just kind of like came into my life, nudged me to go look at something. And, you know, when I did, I looked up on the website for Department of Ag and Markets, and in fact, they announced that they're lifting the cap from 10 research partners who are cultivators for hemp. Again, it's a swim lane, compliant swim lane. Mm-hmm. And I put in what I feel was a great proposal because I was awarded both a license to cultivate, but most importantly, to manufacture these hemp products. So that's kind of how the opportunity came this way. But when you really look at the progression of my company, where it started, again, in my backyard, growing gourmet medicinal mushrooms to help heal the people and the planet. You know, I mean, when you listen to folks like Paul Stamets, you know, he calls magicians, fungus the magicians of the soil. You know, so when organic matter falls onto the surface of the planet, you know, it's largely fungus that is mobilized to decompose and dismantle these things and return them back into the nutrient cycle. Now we took, you know, these approaches to growing clean, biologically diverse, healthy vegetables, and then making food products out of them that were clean. We also started making some mushroom extracts. So it was really a natural progression to now to be able to work with the hemp plant. We did experiment with some food products, you know, cannabis leaf pate, you know, like a pesto. It's very green tasting. Definitely not as tasty as my wife's spinach walnut pesto or our garlic scape pesto. But fortunately, our foray into wellness with the mushroom tinctures and the work there lent itself well to these medicines and products, you know, we're making from hemp now. You know, these CBD dominant CBG products, but cannabinoid.
A lot of people are skeptical of the benefits of CBD and CBG products. What would you say to them? Because you were telling me earlier in a separate conversation, there's not a lot of scientific research behind this. So why, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, so I mean, twofold. One, humans have co-evolved with this cannabis plant, have been using this plant medicine for thousands of years. So we've been conducting research for thousands of years, yet there's still no consensus in modern science that, you know, really validates a lot of these claims that people make. Which brings us to anecdotal stuff. So in a way, science leads to skepticism, which is important, right? Until we can validate something. But at the same time, it can also inhibit development of novel things. So on the other hand, somebody who's maybe taking the scientific approach or like, hey, you know, my doctor says there's not enough science out there. That should not be the reason. You should not attempt to try and incorporate this into your life somehow if you're curious. The fact that these CBD oils are basically sold in every state in various forms, whether it's gas stations, pharmacies, CBD shops or head shops or whatever it is, you know, and there haven't been massive recalls. From my educated mind is enough to say, all right, no one's immediately dying. But most importantly, I'm rambling a little here. If somebody is curious, come into a place like our shop, say, I'm curious about CBD. Obviously vet them, you know, I mean, you want to know what you're taking, for what reason, where it's coming from. I would not fall prey to, you know, crazy claims and glitzy marketing material. Label reading 101 that, you know, Ms. Tuttle taught me back in sixth grade in home economics, you know, high fructose corn syrup, artificial colors. Are they saying made from organic or is it actually really certified organic? But really come into a shop and sample something. You know, so if somebody walks in the door here today, well, I've never tried this before. My first question is, well, do you have something that hurts you? This is what I call like low-hanging fruit, you know, whether it's a finger, a knee, a back, wrist, shoulder. I talk a lot, more than I should. But I prefer to talk the least to get somebody comfortable enough to try something. So then after, say, they put it on their shoulder, as we talk for the next handful of minutes, let the product work for itself. And very often, you start to see like this little bit of like a wiggle. I mean, if you hung out here for a couple of days and saw 10, 20 people come through the door and this happened, you'd see this about, in my experience, about 80 to 90% of the time, they start to do a little bit of a wiggle, usually anywhere from 1 to 5 minutes. Oh, well, I don't know if it's just in my head. And, you know, so when I see this over and over and over, I get it. This isn't a triple blind peer-reviewed study, but anecdotally from my work in the last several years, for myself, my family, and the customers, I see a strong anti-inflammatory response. I've physically seen it. Now, is it going to do that every time? Who knows? Is it worth trying? Sure. I have physically seen an anti-anxiety response. As a matter of fact, a few years ago, my wife had what she felt was her first panic attack ever. She called me up on the phone, and She says, where are you? I said, I'm at the farm. She's like, I'm going to go to the hospital. And if you know her, I mean, she's, you know, a tough Italian gal. That's why I married her, you know? And I said, what's going on? She's like, I don't know. She's like, I don't know if I'm having like a heart attack or something, but like my heart is pounding. It hurts. I'm like, where are you? She's at home. I said, well, I'm at the farm. I have my CBD oil in my pocket. More or less along the way, just stop by. So she came through the farm. I gave her, you know, some of the oil. She held it under her tongue, right? Sublingual, more rapid onset than, say, swallowing, where it's got to go and be digested. And within 5 minutes, she literally stopped shaking. Within about 7 minutes, she was visibly more calm. And within about 10 minutes, she said that whatever was going on, it broke it and stopped that. Now, obviously, if anybody's ever had a panic attack or just experienced anything very traumatic in your life, breaking that part of the trauma cycle is one thing, but you're really pretty much shot for the rest of the day. I mean, you need to shower and sleep that off to reset. But I saw with my own wife, obviously, a deep-seated anti-anxiety reaction. Now, science, and I would also say, you know, hey, that we do need to be cautious. So we hear these stories about anti-inflammatory, anxiety relieving, but we also, or possibly even anti-seizure properties. You know, this was one of the biggest things early on about cannabis medicine we heard out in California, Colorado, and people were medical cannabis refugees where they had to leave their state to get a medicine that helped their child or a family member. So it's important to know why we're doing this. And remember, we want to know what we're taking, for what reason, and like how much. So if somebody is taking this because they're looking to control seizures, you know, this is a medical condition and they should be under the oversight of a medical doctor. So, and full disclosure, I'll say a few years ago, we had a customer, a client, she was a nice young gal who had had a couple of seizures in her life. And, you know, they were getting to the point where they're like, look, you know, if you have another one, you know, we're going to have to put you on probably a lifelong of anti-seizure meds. You know, it's a common story. Not that common in that it happens all the time, but like that narrative, you know. And she began taking some CBD products and, you know, and ours was taken regularly for several months. And the pattern of seizures stopped. So one could say maybe it was helping. Obviously, there's no scientific validation, but she got comfortable and forgot really that there was likely an underlying medical condition and she ran out of oil. And after about a month of not taking it, she had a seizure. And then immediately they put her onto the meds, the anti-seizure meds, which is usually a lifelong journey. So, you know, my point is here, yes, we should be prudent, but it doesn't mean we need to be approved. There are many simple conditions that we can sample these products, see results for ourselves, but obviously we still want to be smart and have situational awareness and make sure we're not ignoring deep underlying medical conditions.
What is a common, like, CBD tincture that somebody would go into your apothecary and try? And then let's say they get this extract or tincture, what's the dose like?
We'll break this into a few little parts here. Maybe we'll talk a little bit like the process of making a hemp extract, right? So right now we're just wrapping up harvest in our fields. I mean, it looks like a marijuana farm and, you know, it's been analyzed within the 20-day window before harvest that it's at or below that 0.3% of Delta-9 THC per the 2014 Farm Bill. So we harvest our certified organic hemp. It's dried. We bucket where we remove the buds off of the stems. During that drying cycle, we do our best. We preen and big leaf and pull off stuff and remove extraneous matter, etc. Then it goes into our cGMP audited lab. So for anybody that doesn't know what cGMP is, it stands for Current Good Manufacturing Standards. These are federal guidelines for dietary supplement manufacturing. Our most current audit, which was our second one this year, just a couple weeks ago, we scored a 99. Our previous audit was a 98. And as I understand it, the only way for us to do better is for the auditor to get yelled at because apparently nobody's perfect.
What are the maximum benefits?
You know, the sky is the limit here. Please, I mean, come down to a shop like ours. You know, hopefully people have already done the vetting who were before you. Hopefully my 20 years of work is enough to for you to feel comfortable to have a conversation like we're having today. And really just to try and see how this works. You know, I don't want to make claims, but definitely through the last several years, as you know, I've come online with these products, as we've brought stuff in, as we've manufactured our own, and we're giving samples and conversations like that, there's been a handful of like hallelujah moments where it's really changed people's lives. And so, I mean, I really wouldn't think that there is a limit or a maximum.
how long would you recommend like using for until you would see any benefits?
Yeah, so low-hanging fruit, you come in that door, I'm going to ask you what hurts you, because I know within 1 to 5 minutes, you're likely going to be noticing something. Now, again, likely, you know, the majority of the time. So what I do, a core part of my work, is what I call throwing boomerangs. People come in, or I have a chance to interact with them. I mean, I've been known to see somebody limping and asking if they're okay, and then shamelessly say, by the way, would you like to try this? And
so you were the guy now.
Yeah. And but I've changed some people's lives doing that. And actually, earlier in the year, there's one right out here in the hallway, and I saw her limping. I was like, hey, you know, you're okay? She's like, oh, you know, like my leg's been all cramped up the last couple days. And I said, hey, would you maybe try something? She said, yeah, sure, why not? She came in, sat in the chair where you guys are right now. I gave her like a quarter dropper of my oil. She rubbed it on literally like in 30 seconds. She's like, what? Like what? She's like, stop.
Anybody that's ever been to the Hamptons knows that there's no better tomato than a Bridgehampton tomato.
No, there is
not. And nobody
not.
Understands why that is. Hamptons tomatoes are different. Can you elaborate on how this is a fact?
Back to the conversation of terroir, but also cultivar selection.
Terroir means what?
Terroir would be the taste of the earth, the taste of the mm-hmm. soil, so the mineralogy. So this is very commonly appreciated in viticulture and wine tasting. Mm-hmm. It's, oh, you know, the terroir, that minerality of the region comes through in this, and there's Merlot. And cannabis, like a quick one, we refer to it often as like chemotypes. So in other words, if we had a clone of a cannabis plant, and one of us grew it hydroponically indoors, and then I grew it outdoors in soil on my farm, you know, with natural sunlight versus the artificial sunlight, chemotypically they will be pretty different. You know, outdoor flower is much darker in color. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so back to the Bridgehampton loam though, like this terroir. Don't get me wrong, there's possibly something for it for cannabis, but largely again, we talked about bad amended soils. But tomatoes are largely grown outdoors in the soil here. And when we remember, you know, we're a glacial deposit. We're like a delta. You know, when we look up here in Bridgehampton and we look to the north of the farm, we see the terminal moraine. So that's kind of like where the glacier stopped. And so when you go up to the terminal moraine, it's actually very rocky and very sandy. And so you can start to see the big picture from there, how over time the rains and the waters wash, just like a delta. They wash down all the clays and the silicas and this loam down into the lowlands. Out front, and that's what made these soils like so great. You know, they were like rich delta-like soils like we have down south, you know, the banks of the Mississippi in a way. I have 5, almost 6 feet of clay loam, you know, before we hit sand. So, I mean, you want to talk about, you know, deep, rich mineral bank, a buffer, you know, full of carbon and microbiology. It's all there. But also, who knows? Maybe it's the salt air from the ocean, which on one hand is a challenge, but maybe how it chemotypically affects the plant, or that would get accounted in the terroir. On our side, I know a lot of people love our tomatoes. We took up the philosophy years ago that we're never going to grow a perfect green tomato plant like many other farmers do. But when we embrace that and we see these plants suffer a little bit, and so follow me through on this mental exercise for a moment. If a plant wants to survive, right, it's going to vegetate, grow its green leafy matter, talking about tomatoes. At a certain point, it's going to decide to produce a fruit in which inside is going to find seeds, right? So I would suppose that for hundreds of years or thousands of years, plants in general want to make themselves appealing to whatever vector is going to ensure that seed is going to be planted or digested, whatever it is, to further perpetuate it. So in our philosophy, at a certain point, we let the plant suffer a little bit, and really we believe that it brings a little extra flavor and sweetness to it. So if the plant is stressed a little, it's saying, oh, crap, like, I got to, like, really make my stuff appealing. I'm going to put on, you know, I'm going to put some extra flavor in there, some extra color in there. And so that's part of our philosophy. Things don't need to be big, green, and perfect all the time. You know, there's compromises to be made, you know, as to what end is your desire.
But, you know, what you said is so interesting because I had met somebody in earlier who used to work at a golf course working with Monsanto chemicals and then became a real convert to organic. But what he mentioned is really the same kind of thing, that it's your intention and allowing imperfection. It's this quest for perfection that man, right, using all the different chemicals, he's saying, like, to get the perfect golf course, but it ends up, like, costing 8 times as much as to maintain, you know, and it has other issues in terms of killing.
Yeah, you're tilting the balance. When you take one extreme to have an aseptic and perfect ecosystem, which is an oxymoron,
right,
the likelihood of that overmanaged, chemically dependent system crashing and reverting into a crisis. You know, that's why we need to seek balance with this. You know, we can tip it a little bit back and forth, you know, to keep it in favor. But when we go to one extreme, we actually subject ourselves to the potential of the other extreme, in a way.
How do you suggest that we, on the East End, support our local organic farmers?
The easiest way is literally every day. Stop at a farm stand. Buy something. Tomato, bottle of olive oil, $3 bunch of basil. But literally, those little things are, we scratch living out of the dirt. You know, when you look at a bunch of radishes, we have $5 for a bunch of radishes. Well, there's 10 radishes in there. We literally had, like, plant the seed, till the soil, weed the stuff, pull them, wash them, and you're complaining that I want 50 cents for one of these, and if there's 10 in a huge bunch, it's $5. Like, to develop a relationship and have conversations so you can see the value over time. You know, we need to remember, when things come at a low price or a perceived bargain, it's usually at the cost of somebody else. Now we can grow tomatoes maybe that don't have as thick of a skin or as long a shelf life. Ones that literally we can barn ripen and you have a 2-day, 3-day window to eat, where a grocery store owner would never contemplate purchasing a tomato like that. And so fundamentally, you're buying completely different products. And remember, not too long ago, in the transition of the 4 days to wherever the hell we are now, when the supply chain for the grocery stores fell apart, it was farmers. It was us who figured out how to make sure when people were sheltering at home,
how to feed
we worked harder than we ever did before, both sourcing and growing food. And I know we're not frontline workers, like the folks in the hospitals and the doctors. I mean, I could only imagine it, but literally we had the front line. We saw people showing up with cars taped off and wearing hazmat suits like it was season 2 of The Walking Dead or some Resident Evil film. And people need to remember every day, because they forgot even after farmers served everybody who sheltered in place. And so when you say, how do you support them? You have to do it every day, because we're creatures of habit. And for some reason, the easiest habit to change is to not shop local.
Great. Thanks, Dave. And Tell us where we can find you. If people are out east, where are your locations?
Oh, yeah. There's our website, openmindedorganics.com. So Open Minded Organics is the name of the farm. Short for that is OMO. So if anybody needs any clarification, what does OMO mean? Who is OMO? It's Open Minded Organics. We have a great 800 number we picked up during the pandemic. Even my daughter got it after the first time. I'm going to pop quiz you right now. So it's 833-833-3800. You'll find us at 720 Butter Lane in Bridgehamptons, where our farm stand is. We added a food truck this year. We use it for processing.
And it operates when?
All right. So yeah, the farm stand, you know, largely runs from, say, the beginning of May through October.
Okay.
The food truck, which does serve as a food manufacturing thing for, you know, pestos and sauces, also serves hot meals on the weekends. Then my wife's shop here, OMO the Apothecary, where we are here today, is on Long Wharf in Sag Harbor, literally 2 doors down from the legendary Big Olaf's Ice Cream. So that's OMO the Apothecary on Long Wharf.
Well, listen, thank you so much for spending time with us and sharing your philosophy.
And we
look forward to even more success.
OMO Apothecary, you guys, check them out. Awesome. Great. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Respect.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Hampton's Consciousness. Enid and JB look forward to seeing you again in future episodes. Remember, the real Hamptons is not just mansions, beaches, and the rich, but a fragile, natural paradise made up of people who care about their community and the World West of Shinnecock Canal.